Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 101, I answer questions from the chat room. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded March 5th, 2012. Episode 101, Asked and Answered. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, online editor of HomeTheater.com. This week's guest geek is the chat room. I had a last-minute cancellation of the guest I was expecting today. So, as always, I can count on the chat room to provide questions and topics to talk about. And, of course, me being the gabmeister that I am, it's not going to be difficult to fill up an hour with very interesting stuff between me and the chat room. So, let's get started. The first question came from Jonathan already, who would like to hear how I got into home theater. Well, I've always watched TV. I've really enjoyed always watching TV and movies. In fact, I still like going out to the theater more than a lot of my associates and a lot of my readers who complain about ticket prices and loud people and texting people and kids kicking the back of their chair and sticky floors and all that stuff. Yeah, those are all issues to deal with when going out to the theater. But there's also something interesting about and compelling to me about going and sharing the experience with a large number of people, the social aspect of it. And I don't mean the social media aspect of it. Certainly, I don't, and I don't want people to be tweeting and Facebooking while I'm watching a movie in a theater, but sitting there in the same room with a bunch of people and sharing the experience to me is very nice, and I enjoy it usually. I also seek out the best possible experience, movie going experience, which in 3D is always IMAX whenever possible, but digital whenever possible, because I much prefer digital projection over film. But that's not saying how I got into home theater. I started my career as a journalist in covering pro audio, what's sometimes called MI or musical instruments. As a musician, I've been a musician far longer than I've been a journalist. And so I got into covering recording studios, synthesizers, recording equipment, that sort of thing. And I did that for many years. But a friend of mine, Larry Ullman, who was the editor of Audio Video Interiors at the time, this was in the early 90s, asked me if I wanted to write something for his magazine about TVs and interiors and so on. And I said, sure, why not? So that's when it started. I started going to CES at that point and slowly transitioned from doing pro audio to doing consumer electronics, home theater, full time, and been doing that now for 20 years. So I have a degree in physics and a degree in music. So I really enjoy the technical aspect of things. And I've always had a knack for explaining technical topics to non-technical people. So I think that's where my success as a home theater journalist has come from, in addition to just being intrinsically interested in the technical aspects of home theater as well as the content. So that is kind of how I got into it. Trex in the chat room asks, what do you think it would take for an Apple TV to be successful besides just brand tag along? Well, that would be a big part of it, I think. Also, if Apple could bring in a TV not at a super exorbitant price, which we probably can't expect given what Apple does, they bring out really fine products that are pretty expensive. So I expect that to be the same with the whatever TV they end up coming out with. So, but of course, we shall see. Let's see. Coyote Brown asks, I have a room that wasn't built with televisions and surround sound in mind. What are some tips for placement of speakers and TV to maximize the sound quality? Well, it depends on the speakers in part. But for most speakers that fire the sound out in one direction, this is one thing that a lot of people don't understand. Ideally, you want to put the speakers away from the walls. They want to be out in the room a couple of feet away from the walls, because if they're right up against the walls tend to reflect and reinforce the sound in a way that lowers the overall sound quality. Really, to get the best, clearest sound, you want the speakers to be kind of away from the wall. Now, that doesn't apply to the subwoofer, because the subwoofer typically you want to put against the wall because you want to, in fact, reinforce that bass a little bit. Now, how much you reinforce the bass depends on whether you put it against a wall or in a corner. You could put it out in the room as well, and that would reinforce the bass the least. Most people put it against at least a wall, if not in the corner. My associate Tom Norton puts his in the corner because he really likes a lot of bass. And when I go over there to watch movies in his theater, I think it tends to be a little bass heavy, but that's just a personal taste thing. So generally speaking, I'd say if you can, place them out in the room. Now, that's not always good for the spouse acceptance factor. So you have to take that into account when placing your speakers. Let's see. Got a bunch of people saying hi, and hi to everyone there. Let's see. How do you find a technician for finding the best seat? Oh, do you have a technique? Sorry. For finding the best seat in an IMAX 3D or regular movie theater? Well, this is from Virgil. I like to sit so that my eyes are level with the center of the screen. And typically in most theaters, it depends. Some theaters have this stadium seating, which is a very raked seating, which I like because there's no chance of any obstructions to your line of sight. Typically, you want to sit a couple of screen heights back. I don't like sitting really close. Some people do, but I don't. But I like to have the center of the screen at the center of my eye level at the center of the screen, and to be centered front left to right to the screen, and about 1.5 or 2 screen heights back is a good place to be for the angle of view. Beatmaster's thinking that an in-wall speakers episode would be cool, and I agree. I don't know that much about in-wall speakers, so I would be happy to find someone who is expert in that. In fact, now that I think about it, Daryl Wilkinson, one of our freelance writers, and interestingly, no relation to me, although his last name is spelled the same, does most of our in-wall speaker reviews, so maybe I'll get him on. I haven't had him on the show. His problem is, not that he has a problem, he lives kind of out in the boonies, which is great, but he doesn't have really great internet access. And now that I'm thinking about it, that's why we haven't had him on the show before, or I would have by now. Let's see. Io Buddha says he's looking for he or she, and please pardon me if I get the personal pronouns wrong. With screen names, you know, you never know. So I might use he, I might use she, and pardon me if I get it wrong. Anyway, Io Buddha asks, is looking for a new TV, wants to upgrade to a 70 to 80 inch. This is a question that I'm actually working on for the website as well. Mostly watches Blu-ray, light is controlled in a 400 square foot room. Well, when you're talking about 70 to 80 inch TVs, you're talking about LCDs or rear projection TVs, and the only company that makes those is Mitsubishi, or a front projector. And because no one makes plasmas. Well, that's not quite true. Only one company makes plasmas larger than 65 inches, and that's Panasonic. They have a couple of 85-inch models, which are in the $20,000 to $30,000 range. They have 103-inch, which is around $40,000. And they have 152-inch, which is half a million bucks. Now, the guy who, in fact, I posted this today on hometheater.com. The fellow who wrote in to ask about that said he wanted an 80-inch plasma for under $6,000. Well, so do I. But nobody makes them. He wondered why not. I don't really know. I would assume that it's just not cost effective to do, and no one would be able to make one for a price that a lot of people could afford. So that is that story. To get a 70 or 80 inch flat panel, it's an LCD. There's no two ways about it. Sharp makes them up to 82 inches. And their new Elites, there's a 60 and a 70 inch, but those are very expensive. $6,000 and $8,000, roughly. So a large flat panel, it's going to be an LCD, and it's probably going to be a Sharp. I can't think of anybody else who makes them off the top of my head. The more cost-effective solution is a rear projection TV. If you don't want a front projector, which then you can get up to just about any size you want, Mitsubishi makes rear projectors based on DLP technology, and they go up to 92 inches. So, and that lists for the 92-incher lists for $6,000, but I saw it on Amazon last night for under $4,000. They also make four models of 82-inchers. So if you want a big direct view TV and you don't want an LCD, which this guy that I answered on the website didn't want an LCD, then a rear projection TV is the only way to go. He said he had complete light control in his room, which was a basement home theater, but he said a front projector wasn't an option, and he didn't say why. So I don't know why that could be. I would think a front projector would be the perfect solution there. But that is what the answer to that is. Marmot says that Apple TV's success will depend more on content deals and presentation than the hardware. That may very well be, and Apple is certainly proven to be very good at content distribution. So it could very well be. The rumors I've heard is that an Apple TV will be a 55-inch OLED or OLED from LG, probably sourced from LG. This is just rumor. There's no fact behind this. No confirmed fact, just rumor. Which, if that were the case, that would be a hell of a TV, but it would probably be very expensive. We don't know how much the LG or Samsung OLEDs are going to be yet, but we do expect to see them before the end of the year, sometime in the second half. let's see here. Thank you very much, Jonathan. I am very happy to be on the Twit Network, and I wouldn't say I'm the coolest, nicest person, but there are many cool and nice people on the Twit Network, and I am just thrilled to be associated with them. But thank you for that nice compliment. Spyro Gyro. Oh, nice screen name. Could you name off some things to keep in consideration when renovating a basement for home theater use? Sure. First of all, because it's a basement, it probably doesn't have any windows, so that's a good thing. If it does, make sure that they can be completely light blocked. I don't have a basement home theater, but I have a home theater in one room in my house, and I have installed blackout curtains that completely seal the light out, so it can get very dark in there during the day, or at night, it's about the same. Very dark. I would say, if possible, depending on the spousal acceptance factor, that you want to paint the walls a dark, neutral gray. Now, that's not necessarily all that attractive, but it's the best for video. Now, there's a particular color of neutral gray called Munsell, M-U-N-S-E-L-L. Munsell gray. You can look that up online. And they sell a chip chart with these different shades of gray that have no hue. And that's the important part, is that they aren't biased towards blue or red or green. Because when you have, particularly if you're in a front projection system, but also with direct view as well, The light is going to come off the screen and bounce off the walls and reflect into your eyes. And so you want dark, you want as little reflectivity as possible, and you want as little color biasing as possible. So I have my home theater painted this Munsell gray with, I believe it's 10% reflectivity. Same in the studio here where we review TVs. It's a very dark Munsell gray. Why didn't I paint it black? I could have painted it black. But black, I thought, would be kind of too oppressive. And it might also show up Nixon scratches a little better, too. And the Munsell gray, the dark gray, 10% reflectivity or so, when you turn off all the lights, it's a black hole in there. So I have no trouble with that. But painting it a dark neutral gray, a Munsell gray, is the best thing to do. In terms of audio, your basement probably has the dimensions it has. I mean, ideally, you would want to start from scratch and build a new room, which could have the ideal dimensions for audio. But assuming that you simply have whatever you have in terms of the dimensions of your basement, I would definitely do some acoustical treatments if necessary. Now, that really requires a professional. So if you're doing it right, you know, hire a professional who will come in and do an acoustic analysis of the room and then recommend acoustic treatments to place on the walls. And there are three types of acoustic treatments. Four, really. There are reflectors, diffusers, and absorbers. And where each of those types go in the room depend on the acoustical properties of the room. But you can greatly improve the audio performance of your room, and it's important to consider your room as a component of your home theater system. You can greatly improve the audio performance of the room and therefore of the entire audio system by doing this acoustical treatment. The fourth type of acoustical treatment is called a bass trap, which is specifically for low frequencies. And low frequencies are the most problematic frequencies in any room, because they can set up what are called standing waves. Depending on the dimensions of the room, certain frequencies will be reinforced and create what are called standing waves. And depending on where you sit in the room will determine whether or not that frequency sounds louder than other frequencies or softer, because you might be sitting at what's called a peak, or you might be sitting in what's called a null. Null is where the sound wave cancels itself, and so you really hear not much of that frequency. And a peak is where the sound wave reinforces itself, and you hear more of that frequency than the frequencies around it. So those are the things that I would recommend thinking about. Also, seating positions are important. You want to sit where there are fewest nulls in particular, because you can't EQ those away. You want to acoustically treat the room, which will minimize the problems of peaks and nulls of standing waves, particularly in the low frequencies, and that will be that'll be a great way to improve the sound. Munsell gray walls and ceiling, black or dark neutral floor. I have a black carpet in my home theater. Seating distance appropriate to the screen size is another factor to consider. You want different people have different opinions about this, but generally speaking, I like the viewing angle from my eyes to the outer edges of the screen to be 30 degrees, which is the SMPTE recommendation, Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers. THX recommends something between 26 and 36 degrees, but I generally go for 30 degrees. With a 16:9 screen in high definition. Let's see here. SoCal Ray Jr. says, yes, going back to that question about the larger screen size, maybe better going with a projector. And I agree. I do agree with that. As long as you can completely control the light, then you can go into the 100 inches or so. Most projectors specify a screen size up to 300 inches, but keep this in mind. The larger the screen size for a given projector, the less light will be coming off the screen towards you because the light coming from the projector is fixed. There's a fixed amount of light hitting the screen. The larger the screen, the less light per unit area is reflected. That means that the peak white level that you see as you're watching the screen goes down as the screen gets larger. The black level also goes down as the screen gets larger. The ideal peak white, that is when you show 100% white field on the screen, the amount of light coming off that screen, the ideal theater specification is 16 foot Lamberts. And foot Lamberts is a unit of measure of brightness coming off the screen. So if you make the screen large enough that the peak white level is lower than 16, then you're kind of defeating the purpose of the home theater. 16, that's what you want to get to is 16 foot Lamberts. And the only way to know that is to use a light meter, which is calibrated in foot Lamberts. And that's a bit of an expensive thing. You might want to hire somebody to do that. Let's see. Swamp Rat asks, a while back, my Denon receiver stopped being responsive with all of its HDMI inputs. Uh-oh. No audio or video passing through. Unplugged the power overnight. It's been working perfect since. Wow. Well, any idea what might be causing this? Well, I'd have to say that like most AV components these days, AV receivers, TVs, Blu-ray players, they're all basically computers. And specific one-purpose computers. And computers crash, don't they? Yes, they do often. And in fact, on the radio show with Leo last Saturday, he was taking a look at, he has a new Samsung TV behind him on his set. And he was going into the apps and the TV crashed. And so he was complaining that, oh, you know, apps shouldn't be in the TV. TV's becoming a computer. Well, whether or not the apps are in the TV or not, it's still going to be a computer. thus, it could be prone to crashing. And the Denon, that may be exactly what happened there. And, you know, you reboot the computer. Oftentimes it comes back and it's just fine. Reverb Mike says, yeah, I need a mortgage for that big screen. Certainly for the 152-inch Panasonic you do. $500,000. Basically, what I was told by Panasonic on that one, if you're going to buy this TV, this 152-inch plasma TV, you want to build your house around it. So, yes, you need a mortgage just for the TV. This is good. Who is this? Pinky in the chat room quotes Grammar Girl, who I've actually used before, and this is not about home theater. It's about pronouns, personal pronouns, says that they, using they as a singular pronoun, a non-gender specific singular pronoun, is getting more and more acceptable. And I agree. And in fact, I tend to use that rather than he/she or s/he. Now we're getting into a little bit of grammar geekiness, but I hope you'll forgive me for that. But that is a very good point, and it's true. So I may try to do that here in the chat room just to be on the safe side. Virgil says, have you cured the motion blur when watching fast-moving shows on LCD TVs? Well, I haven't, but certainly the manufacturers have tried to. By using what's called frame interpolation. And I've talked about this before, and I'm sure that many of you probably already know about this. And the way it works is that the number of frames coming into an LCD or any TV is 60 per second. And so what the LCD TVs do to, and if you simply display them that way, very often motion, objects in fast motion will appear blurred on an LCD screen. And the way they solve that problem is they have powerful enough processors that they synthesize and create frames in between the actual frames that are coming in. The TV does this on the fly in real time. And it takes a look at objects that are in motion. It takes a look at frame A and frame B. And it says, oh, this object's in motion. And in frame A, it's here. In frame B, it's there. So in the frame in between A and B, it would be here. It would be in the middle between those two positions. And it creates that frame and displays it. This is called frame interpolation, or motion estimation, motion compensation, or MEMC. Now, it works pretty well, but it has a side effect. And the side effect is called the soap opera effect, because it makes movies in particular, which are shot at 24 frames per second, look like they were shot on video. It makes them look like they were shot like a soap opera. Thus, it's called the soap opera effect. And a lot of videophiles hate this with a passion. They would much rather see blurry motion. I'm not one of them. Sure, I can see it, but it doesn't bother me. And it's not terribly obvious to me. Again, my associate Tom Norton, the instant he sees it, he knows. He said, oh, you got frame interpolation on. He can see it, and it just bugs the heck out of him. And if I pay attention, I can see it, but it doesn't bother me. And I'd much rather see sharper motion. So that is a debate that is going to continue in my industry, in our industry, and on our hobby for as long as LCDs do this. And part of the problem, of course, is that movies are shot at 24 frames per second. And there's not a lot you can do about that. James Cameron and Peter Jackson is filming The Hobbit at 48 frames per second. James Cameron is supposed to be shooting Avatar 2, whatever that's going to be, at 48, I believe, frames per second. And when you do that, you actually get much sharper motion just out of the gate, because you've got twice as much information, that the objects only move half as far from one frame to the next. But we're not going to see that become a consumer thing for, I'd say, a while, a couple of years, maybe. Hopefully we will see those movies displayed in the theater at 48 frames per second. I'm pretty sure most digital cinema projectors can do that. And I would certainly recommend to anyone going out to see those movies that they look for a digital presentation rather than a film presentation of those movies, because I doubt the film presentation is going to be at 48. It's going to be at 24, in which case they're simply going to remove every other frame from the original source and have 24 frames per second. So that's what I recommend there. So Cal Ray Jr., getting back to the question about the basement, you could build a room within a room. Yes, I was going to mention that, and then I thought, well, you know what? That's a really expensive thing to do, but you can. You can build a room within the room, and you can optimize the dimensions of that room within a room, the smaller room, for the audio. But that's a pretty expensive proposition. DC Charles asks, what are the top two or three compact home theater systems? Uh-oh, hang on a second here. My chat room just jumped. Top two or three compact home theaters for those on a budget. I'm not sure I can make a recommendation there. We just reviewed the Onkyo HTS9400 THX home theater in a box, which I was expecting to do really well, and it didn't. The receiver that comes with that unit is fine. It's great. It's essentially the same as the TXNR609 receiver, which is very highly regarded. But the speakers were kind of funky. And so as a system, we can't recommend it. And as a result, there are no home theater in a box systems currently that we, as a publication, can recommend. What I do recommend for those on a budget is the following. Pioneer makes some speakers that are quite remarkable. They are the, let me see if I can look those up here. They make a couple of different ones. Oh yeah, compact speaker systems. I have that page up. How nice and convenient. Okay, they make several speakers under the SP-BS41LR. That's the name of the front, right, and left that we reviewed. They also make corresponding surrounds and a center and a subwoofer. The system price for a 5.1 system of these speakers, $528. You pair that with a $600 Onkyo 609 receiver or the Pioneer, in fact, VSX 1021 receiver, which is $550. So, you know, you're in the $1,100 range, which is about what the Onkyo home theater in a box costs. Now, that's 7.1. But for not an extra another $150, you could get the 7.1. You would have a system that would really kick some serious butt, much more than the Onkyo would. And so that's when you're really on a budget, that's what I recommend you do is you get these Pioneers speakers. They make a BS-41 and a BS-21 as well, which is a little smaller. I think that's what they used, what Mark Fleischman, the reviewer, used in the rears for the surrounds, the BS-21s and the BS-41s in the front. And boy, that's quite a system for just over $1,000. So let's see here. My chat room keeps jumping around. And by the way, for those of you who are in the chat room and posting questions for me, thank you so much for doing that. If you use my full handle, screen name, which is Scott Wilkinson with a capital S and a capital W, no spaces, it appears on in a different color on my screen, and so it will draw my eye to it better. Here was one, though, that's not in red from AudioFan. Do you recommend using the exact same speaker for right, center, left channel or a different dedicated center speaker? Well, that's actually a great question. Ideally, yes, the exact same speaker for the front three speakers is the best solution. But it's difficult because most of the time those speakers are going to be vertically oriented. They're going to be taller than they are wide, and so they're going to get in the way of the picture. A couple ways around that. One is if you have a front projection system, you can use what's called an acoustically transparent screen. Stewart and others make them with tiny little perforations called microperf, and this is what they use in commercial cinemas. They actually have the speakers behind the screen. If you go up, next time you go out to the movies, before the movie starts or after it's over and you're on your way out, walk right down to the screen and look at the screen very, very closely, and you will see it is punctured, it is perforated with a bunch of tiny holes. Now, in a commercial cinema, those holes are bigger than they are in a home theater screen because the commercial screen is a lot bigger than a home theater screen, so they can be bigger. The speakers are bigger too because you're playing to several hundred people. In a home theater, they're smaller, so it's called microperf or microperforation. And you can put your speakers behind it, and the sound comes through. Now, there is some high-frequency roll-off when you do that. You need, with a perforated screen, you need to have your speakers about a foot behind the projection screen, so that requires more floor space. Another option is what's called a woven screen, and screen research was the pioneer in this. Others now make them as well, and it's basically a screen material that is a woven fabric of thin fibers that are woven together like cloth. But the weaving pattern has little tiny holes in it, and the sound gets through. And so that's another acoustically transparent screen. You don't have to put the speakers as far back behind the woven screen as you do the perforated screen. And they don't roll off the high frequencies as much. But they do have a texture to them, a pattern to them. The perforated screen has a pattern too, a pattern of perforations, if you will. Good thing I have a pop screen on this microphone. And in the old days, that used to cause a potential problem with digital projectors, which make their picture with pixels, right? So the interference, sometimes the relationship between the pixels and the perforations caused weird moiré effects. It's less common today with 1080p projectors. And the texture of a woven screen also can cause moiré, distortion, some other problems. generally speaking, I prefer a woven screen to a perforated screen. In fact, I have one at home that I use when I use a projector at home, but that isn't often these days since I have a Kuro, Pioneer Kuro Plasma, and that's what I watch these days. But if you can't do a perforated screen or an acoustically transparent screen with a projection system, and you have a flat panel, say, or a rear projection TV or some sort of direct view, then having three identical speakers in the front is not easy to do. And in that case, yes, I would get a dedicated center channel, which is horizontally oriented. They can have their own set of problems, which is, in particular, they're organized such that you have two woofers and then maybe a tweeter in the middle, or maybe a tweeter and a mid-range in the middle. And depending on where you sit, it can potentially cause what's called a comb filtering effect. So if you move a few degrees one way or the other, certain frequencies will sound stronger or less strong than they were where you were originally sitting. Overall, though, I would say center channel speakers are generally good. Marmot asks, what's the best movie snack, Skittles or popcorn? Well, I don't eat popcorn, so I can't really comment on that. Skittles are great. I like Skittles quite a bit. Junior Mints are my favorite, though. let's see here. I know I got a bunch of questions. Beatmaster says, Leo had issues with the Samsung Smart TV last Saturday. Do you worry about such things that such things will accumulate even more looking forward? Well, yeah, I do worry about that a little bit. On the other hand, with each generation, you know, they make improvements. And so I think they will make, I mean, look at computers, right? The early days of computers, they crashed a lot more than they do today. Certainly with I'm an Apple guy. I'm a total Mac guy. So, you know, my computers rarely crash. I don't know about Windows these days. I assume that they used to crash a lot more than they do now. So there are improvements with each generation. And the same thing is true of consumer electronics and TVs and so on. So I think it's going to be, I think it's going to get better as we go. iPad 66003 asks, do they make an equalizer for video? That's actually a very good question. I guess what that really means is a video processor. SoCal Ray Jr., maybe you can help me out on this one. There is actually a video processor called Video EQ from AV Foundry, which is basically a video processor. And I guess that's probably what I would say it would be an equalizer for video because it changes the balance of red, green, and blue. It'll change the grayscale and the color of the different colors. So in that sense, yes, it's an equalizer. And all TVs have some degree of that capability in them, but it's generally not as good as an outboard box like this Video EQ or the Lumigen Radiance or you know, any one of a number of other products, which are generally pretty expensive. We're talking you know, in the couple thousand bucks. So they do make them, but they're generally going to be expensive. Cass asks, I'd like to buy an RF Harmony remote. Do most modern components have RF capability built in? The answer is no. Most components do not. however, that isn't to say you shouldn't buy an RF remote. I love RF remotes because you don't have to point them in any particular direction. They're not line of sight. So you can be looking at them. You can hold them up. You can move them around. It doesn't matter. You don't have to point them at things. In order to use them with most AV equipment, what they're going to come with and what you're going to have to set up, which is a little bit of a pain, is what's called an IR blaster. Okay, so the remote itself sends out RF, radio frequency signals. Those get picked up by a radio frequency or RF receiver, which sits in with your equipment. And out of that RF receiver, it has a series, several outputs, little jacks. And you plug in these cables, these little wires to these jacks. And at the other end of the cable is a little IR blaster. It's a little infrared emitter. And you have to kind of tape that on to, or use the sticky that comes on it, onto the IR window, receiver window, on each component. And when you do that, then the RF receiver receives the RF from the remote. It converts that into IR and sends that on to each of the receivers. So I do like RF remotes, but they're a little bit of a problem to set up. But once you do, it's great. Web 5059 asks, what are my thoughts on 4K TVs? My thoughts on 4K TVs are the following. I like them. I think they look really great. But we're not going to see 4K content being delivered to the home anytime soon. And I'm talking years. I really don't think so. The studios are just now, well, they pretty well standardized on archiving their movies to 4K. But distributing that to consumers is not going to happen. Not for a long, long time. So what 4K TVs are relegated to is upconverting 1080p or Blu-ray or broadcast. So how good do they look? Depends on the quality of the upscaler, the processor that takes that 1080p and increases it to 4K. Now, the one place where the 4K is, I think, going to be most impactful, going to have the most impact, is in passive glasses 3D. Because there's two kinds of 3D TVs. There's ones that use active glasses, and there are those that use passive glasses. The ones that use active glasses have these glasses that alternately turn on and off, on, off, on, off, in sync with the TV showing the right eye image and the left eye image, and the right eye image and the left eye image. That goes back and forth really fast. Each eye sees full 1080p, 1920 by 1080 resolution. With passive glasses, there are 1,080 lines from top to bottom. Each one is polarized in an opposite direction. So all the odd-numbered lines are polarized for the left eye. All the even-numbered lines are polarized for the right eye, or vice versa. I don't remember which it is, but it's like that. So each eye is only seeing 540 lines on a 1080p passive 3D TV. And people complained about that, and Vizio and LG are the companies, Toshiba also, are the companies that do passive 3D. And they have some research to prove, in quotes, that the brain fuses those two images together, and what you end up seeing is a 1080 line 3D image. And I will say that in my experience, looking at a passive 3D TV with the passive 3D glasses, the sharpness, the detail that I see is greater than 540 lines, no question. It looks like a 1080p image. There are fine, fine black lines that are horizontal that you can see, especially if you're sitting too close. But even when you're sitting the right distance away, if you have light letters on a dark background, you'll see them. And that is because of this fact that each eye really is only seeing 540 lines. And so that's a problem. Now, with a 4K TV with passive 3D, each eye is going to see 1080 lines. And those thin black lines are going to be really much thinner. So with a 4K TV, you're going to see passive 3D much better than you do now. So that's why passive 4K is the most important thing about 4K, in my opinion, is for passive 3D. Otherwise, it's not that important. let's see here. Pardon me for clearing my throat. I don't normally talk constantly on Home Theater Geeks here. Beatmaster says, you mentioned ARC on the Tech Guy, which was just last Saturday. You might remind people that the receiver needs that function as well. And that's a very good point. Thanks, Beatmaster, for bringing that up. ARC stands for Audio Return Channel. And it's a feature of HDMI 1.4, the latest current version of HDMI. And what it does is this. Normally, in an AV, you would have an AV receiver. It would have some devices connected to its HDMI or other inputs, and it would send HDMI from its HDMI output to the TV. But what if you're using the TV's onboard over-the-air tuner or its online apps? We were talking about those a little earlier. How are you going to hear the audio? You don't want to listen to the TV speakers, that's for sure. So what Audio Return Channel does is it takes the audio from the TV, sends it back to the receiver along the cable that's normally sending signals into the TV. So in other words, it's going the opposite way, and it sends that back to the receiver. But the receiver has to have that capability in order for it to work. If it does, and the TV has the capability as well, then when you watch an online app, say Netflix or whatever, or the over-the-air antenna, you will hear that audio coming out of your receiver and into your home theater system. Now, speaking of Netflix, I would be remiss if I did not mention and remember to thank Netflix for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the TWiT Network. This episode, in fact, is brought to you by Netflix, which lets you watch thousands of TV episodes and movies directly on your TV, from the TV, as we've been talking about, or from your Blu-ray player or your game console, or even your PC. I mean, you know, if you want to be old school about it, definitely you can get it just about on any device you have in your house these days. Even your smartphone or tablet, and stream it all to your TV or any display device you have. You can even start on one device and finish on another. So many options. My wife and I just watched a great show on Netflix called The Human Family Tree. And I have to say, it was among the best high-def streaming I've ever seen. It looked great. Show about basically tracing the evolution of humans, modern humans, out of Africa using genetic techniques. And boy, the HD just looked great. And so, you know, I don't think that's available on Blu-ray, or if it is, I don't have it. So it was so much easier. It was very easy to just find it on Netflix, watch it in my home theater. It worked great. Of course, Netflix is offering a 30-day free trial for TWiT listeners and viewers. All you have to do is go to netflix.com/TWiT and sign up for your 30-day free trial. And be sure to use that URL, netflix.com/TWiT. And again, we thank Netflix for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the TWiT Network. Okay, let's get back to questions from the chat room, of which there are many. Thank you so much for posting them. Dark says something about the next standard should be 360 frames per second. Well, yeah, but that would start using a lot of storage space. Let's see. Enzo asks, is 3D a passing fad? Any signs it is growing or waning? That's actually a very good question. I don't know that I have any hard numbers, but I will say that my impression is that 3D is perhaps waning a bit. And one piece of evidence I have to support that is an article that somebody in the chat room hipped me to during the radio show about a week and a half ago. Just over a week ago, from a Dutch news site that said that Samsung was no longer interested in supporting 3D. Now, the article was in Dutch, and I don't speak Dutch, but I have a friend who does. And so he translated it for me, and that's what it said. Now, I actually showed that to Samsung, and I said, what's your response? Well, they're working on an official response, but as far as the sort of off-the-cuff response was, well, that doesn't apply to the U.S. And I believe that. I think Samsung is still going to push 3D in the U.S., as is Sony, Panasonic, Vizio, LG. All the majors are going to, it's going to be there. And it's going to be just a feature. You know, it's going to be another feature in the TV. You're not going to really have to pay that much extra for it. So I think it's here to stay. I really do. Plus the fact that the studios are still putting out 3D movies. Can't wait to see The Lorax, the new Dr. Seuss movie. I think that's going to look fabulous. Wrath of the Titans, I'm not so sure. Since Clash of the Titans was so poor, that could really be funky. those of you who listen to the radio show know that I really didn't think that Star Wars, George Lucas converted Star Wars Episode 1 to 3D. And I went and saw it, and it was horrible. It was, well, it was virtually non-existent. There wasn't any 3D. So it's not always good. But if a movie is made for 3D and made from the beginning with 3D in mind, it can be very, very good. And I really enjoy it. Some people don't. And if you don't, more power to you. I do. So I'm going to continue to see it, and I'm going to continue to write about it. Let's see. Ooh, here's a good question. Web1835. To watch 3D movies with passive glasses, can I buy two identical projectors and fit them with polarizers? And the answer is yes, absolutely you can. There is a company called Flexible Picture Systems that makes a kit that comes with two polarizing filters and the processors necessary to integrate them and synchronize them in such a way that you can do exactly as you say. Now, the kit itself costs, I think it's about $7,500, not including the price of the projectors. But you do need to synchronize them. You can't just, you need to have a Blu-ray 3D player that needs to send to these processors that split the left and right signals and send them accordingly to the corresponding projectors. So it's not as simple as just buying two projectors. And it isn't all that cheap, but you will get much greater brightness. One of the problems with 3D is that it's very dim because the glasses remove so much light coming into your eyes. And it also eliminates this left-right alternating line problem. So you see full resolution in each eye. So it is a good solution. Oni says, yeah, I was thinking budget like $300 or $400. Well, you know, I'm sorry. I cannot recommend home theater, an entire system, say a receiver and speakers or a home theater in a box at $300. I haven't heard any that I thought sounded any good. So people often ask me, you know, what's the minimum to get into home theater at a reasonable performance level? And my answer generally is a couple $1,000. $1,000 for the audio system and $1,000 for the TV. Now, I'm starting to look at TVs closer to the $500 range. They're going to be in the 40 to 42-inch size range. And if I find any that are good, I'll certainly report that. But 40 or 42 inches is barely enough for me to call it home theater. It's just not big enough to be an immersive experience. And I know people are hurting and they need to keep their budgets tightly reined in, which is why I'm looking for very inexpensive TVs to recommend if I can. I'm also looking right now, in fact, at low-cost front projectors to see if I can find any to recommend there. But those are in the $1,000 to $1,500 range. To get anything really high quality, you need to start at about $3,000. So that's that. But I'm trying to find projectors in that $1,000 to $1,500 range. So that's Hopefully. And in fact, I'm at the moment working on the Mitsubishi HC4000 projector, which is the best of the low-cost projectors I've seen so far. It's actually quite good. The big problem with all these low-cost projectors is black level. They're simply, the blacks are not black. They're dark gray. And that's one of the most important aspects of picture quality that I can think of. But the Mitsubishi that I'm looking at is actually better than most on that. Let's see here. Boy, I got so many questions. What do I think of the 2D application, 2D capabilities of the Epson TW6000? I don't know. Haven't seen it. But I do like the Epson projectors generally. Their $1,500 job, the 8350, did not impress me very much, but their projectors in the $3,000 range are really good. Any idea what would cause the menu on my projection TV to appear like it's falling off to the right? Could be the overscan control, the aspect ratio control. If you have it on a zoom setting, that would cause that to be. But it would also cause the regular image to be cropped off the edges, and you might notice that as well. Isn't the center speaker the biggest victim of the flat TV race? No wife wants a 15 to 25 inch deep speaker. Well, yeah, that's true. And the center speaker, you're right, is the biggest victim of the flat TV race. But if you want good sound, Larry Ullman just reviewed a Vizio soundbar, and he had a great hook in that article, which will get posted in the next day or two, quoting Montgomery Scotty from Star Trek, saying, "You cannot change the laws of physics." Speakers have to have a certain size and they have to be operating in a certain volume in order to sound good, and that's why TV speakers sound so lousy. SoCal Ray Jr., yes, DVDO Duo is another quote-unquote video EQ or equalizer. I shouldn't use that term because that's an actual product. DVDO Duo and the Lumigen are other examples of those. But the DVDO is not that expensive. I think they have one called the Edge, which is like $800. SoCal Ray, correct me if I'm wrong on that. Let's see, Web 1382, any thoughts on weird background bending one sometimes sees on fast-moving subjects in Blu-ray movies? Can't say I know that. I don't remember seeing that, so sorry. Web 2474, the ViewSonic Pro 8200 projector is probably one of the best for quality to price. I hope to find out. I've asked ViewSonic for that very model, and I'm not sure they're going to send me one. They wanted to send me the Pro 8400, which is much closer to $3,000. And I told them, no, I need to be in the $1,000 to $1,500, under $2,000, certainly. And I'm not sure they're going to send me one. I hope they do, because I would love to see it. Let's see, Woogie asks, can my speakers be too far away from my TV? Can my TX NR509 AVR Onkyo compensate? Yes, the speakers can be too far from the TV. If you have your TV in the center and your right and left speakers are way, way off to the sides, then yes, you'll get a sort of a sense of disconnect. You'll see the action happening in one place and you'll hear the sound from that action coming from a different place. So you don't want them to be too far away from the screen itself. That is correct. Let's see. Web 7085, have I ever thought about publishing a book about all this stuff? I have, in fact. I haven't published one. I've thought about it. But there are a lot of home theater books on the market. I need to come up with a hook that would be make it be different than everything else. But yes, I have thought about it and may very well do that at some point. The DVDio Edge processor. I haven't reviewed it. I did play around with it a little bit, and I thought it was very good. DVDio processing is very, very good. So I think SoCal Ray Jr., you probably have looked at the DVDio Edge more than I have. If you have any thoughts on it, post them. Let's see here. Sorry about that, folks. I'm kind of behind in the chat room. So some of you have been posting your questions several times, and I'm trying to get to as many as I can. Web 5638. Do you know why when I watch a recording from DVR, I have to listen to it at a higher volume than if I watched it live? No, I do not know why that would be. I have not found that to be true of my Dish Network DVR or my TiVo. So couldn't tell you. Carlo, will there be new black and white TVs, maybe in 3D for the new Oscar-winning film? Well, The Artist was not in 3D, but it was in black and white. I saw that movie, by the way. Fabulous, fabulous movie. If you haven't seen it yet, by all means, highly recommended. Definitely deserved the Oscar. As did the actor, whose name I don't remember. But, that was just great. I don't think there will be new black and white TVs. Although that does bring up an interesting point that when we calibrate TVs and displays in general, one of the first things we do is make sure that the color of gray as it goes from black to white is correct. And interestingly, what is correct for color TV is somewhat different than what is correct for black and white movies. Black and white movies are generally the correct color of gray is a little bit redder than the correct color of gray for color. So the pure video file will have two setups stored in their memory in the projector. One for color and one for black and white, in order to see it exactly as the director intended. Let's see. Web 6786. Is anyone using the NanoSys technology, or will OLED surpass this technology? No one is using, there are no NanoSys based products out yet. And for those who might not have seen that episode, it was a couple of episodes ago, Home Theater Geeks, I had on the guy from NanoSys to talk about his new technology, which is a new backlight technology for LCD TVs. Instead of using LEDs or fluorescent lights, he's using a nanotechnology, which looks very interesting. And I suspect will be less expensive by a lot than OLED. So I think there's still a place in the market for it, at least at first. When OLED first comes out, it'll be very expensive. So there's a place for NanoSys. Well, you know what? There are so many more questions, and I thank you all so much for posting them. But we've come to the end of the hour, and boy, the hour just flips right by, doesn't it? I always enjoy doing these answer the chat room question shows because I want to help all of you as much as I possibly can to get the most out of your audio video systems and to buy the best that you can for whatever budget you might happen to have. So with that, I will say that you can find me online at hometheater.com. You can email me at scott@twit.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. Now, next week, I think, is a little up in the air because my guest this week was unable to join us. So I might slot him in if I can. But I already have a guest scheduled for next week, so we'll see how that goes. It might be John Schindler, the VP of Product Development at Vizio, talking about his company's new 21x9 TVs and 4K and Google and passive 3D. which is what I was hoping to talk about today. Or it might be Renato Pellegrini, the co-founder of Sonic Emotion, a company that has made a very interesting 3D audio technology. So you can look forward to one of those two guys next week. Until then, geek out.